Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 7 Investing Podcast. I'm JT Street from the 7 Investing Marketing Team, and I am joined today by 7 Investing founder and CEO, Simon Erickson, and we are going to talk about the best stocks of 2024 contest. We are just about halfway through with our selections for the contest here throughout the month of May, and we are going to pick what we think and what you think are the best 7 stocks of 2024. Of course, we're not alone in this. We are joined by dozens of investors who are trying to figure out what their top 7 stocks of 2024 are, all to win a $1,000 Amazon gift card and free subscriptions to 7 Investing and our partner Stock Card for this contest. So it's going to be a really fun year as we go through and pick our top stocks of 2024 and then follow that performance throughout the year. Simon, how are you doing today?
Great, JT. Glad to be here with you. Like you said, man, what better can you get? You go out, you pick stocks, you can win $1,000 and get a free year of Stock Card and 7 Investing. Sounds like a win-win-win to me.
You know, I've enjoyed the creativity that some people have done in Stock Card. You know, you get in there, you build your portfolio of 7 stocks. It's a free profile, right? You don't have to pay anything. You get in there and make your portfolio. And I've seen a couple of people make multiple portfolios to try and get in there too. One of the ones I saw, they actually did an anti-wisdom of the crowds portfolio based on what we're doing here in these podcasts. So for people who have been following us, we started out with Novo Nordisk versus Celsius. We did a poll on X about that. The crowd picked Celsius, right? After that, we went Uber versus Rocket Lab. The crowd picked Rocket Lab. We are currently going the Trade Desk versus Palantir, and looks like the crowd is picking Trade Desk, but there's a portfolio that's being built right now that whenever we pick one, they pick the opposite, which I think is just great. Like, it cracked me up.
I think it makes a lot of sense too when you think about it. You know, in disclaimer, you know, we are doing this in support of our stock picking competition. These are not official recommendations. They're just stock ideas we want to put out there to complement this competition. But, like you said, maybe sometimes the best stock is not the most popular stock. So it'll be interesting to see how both of those play out.
Yeah. I mean, and so for people who are following, the competition runs from March of 2024 to March of 2025, and you can add and drop stocks along the way. So it'll be interesting to see what that kind of counterbalance point of view does throughout the year. We are actually going to talk a little bit today about the Trade Desk versus Palantir, because that's the poll that's going on right now. We're also going to talk about our next poll, which is going to be really interesting with a couple of brick and mortar retailers. We're going to talk Crocs, C-R-O-X, versus American Eagle Outfitters, which is A-E-O. So that's going to be an interesting one too. Full disclosure on that, I am a proud Crocs shareholder and I own several pairs of Hey Dude, which is the bolt-on acquisition that Crocs recently did. I like Hey Dude a lot more than Crocs. They're more comfortable, but you know, don't tell the people buying Crocs that. So Simon, before we get into that though, let's talk about the current competition right now, which is the Trade Desk versus Palantir. You set this up as kind of a battle of the AI adjacent companies. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because AI, you know, everyone's talking about that now, and kind of the conversation tends to focus around, you know, well, is GPT is the best large language model out there? You know, is Gemini going to be the one that's really going to, like, is you know, Elon's new that he's creating? Everyone's kind of talking about the AI platforms themselves, but I think that a lot of times when you have a trend like this, it doesn't have to be the company that is, you know, the front runner, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's a lot of times it's the companies that are taking those things that they're creating and running with them. And so the two companies that we're featuring here, the Trade Desk and Palantir, have both incorporated AI into their own platforms for their own businesses to make them even smarter and more efficient. And they've done it very, very well. And it's kind of exciting to see for us as investors, two fantastic performing companies right here.
Now, but in completely different spheres, right? You've got the Trade Desk, which is using AI in more of a marketing, advertising, ad placement venue versus Palantir, which is honestly, I've read Palantir stuff like 5 or 6 times. I just can't get beyond Peter Thiel and a lot of shady backroom, spooky cybersecurity things that I have no frame of reference on, but scare me. That's my concept of Palantir.
Yeah, it's do we want to start with that one? Should we talk about Palantir first?
Sure, go for it.
Sure, yeah. Okay, so like you said, Palantir is a very interesting company, very eccentric company. And that's not surprising, right? When you've got Peter Thiel kind of in the founding group there, you've got Alex Karp, who's their CEO, who is equally as eccentric right there. And even the architects that built, I mean, these are kind of, you know, very, very smart people, but not the most normal people if you're sitting down and having a dinner conversation with them. But, you know, Palantir was for years kind of one of the largest private companies, right? This is a company that stayed private for a very, very long time. They got their roots with the U.S. government, who was using its artificial intelligence powered operational intelligence platform to kind of pull all these data sets together, right? You need to have a common ontology. You want to take all of this data and then layer these analytical tools on top of it. And you want to find the needles in the haystacks, right? You can't let anything fall through the cracks. You've got a really good understanding of what's going on out there. And so it was the U.S. Army that used it for kind of monitoring and getting intel on troops and kind of military purposes, a lot of even satellite stuff that, you know, kind of gave them a lot of their initial revenues. And they just developed this bigger and bigger. You know, now it's being used for the military support for Ukraine. It's being used for national security for nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons that U.S. stockpiles. And the government contracts kind of opened the door for Palantir to come to the public markets and say, you know, hey, we're not going to give you the full platform that we offer to the government for intel, but we are going to give now a commercial version of this operational intelligence platform, right? Companies just like the government, they want to learn how they want to do intel, right? Maybe it's not for military purposes, but certainly for commercial purposes. You want to see, you know, where are you spending too much money on your operations? If you're running an airline or if you're running an airport, you know, how can you make that more efficient? If you're running an insurance operation, how can you balance out kind of your costs with your premiums? And just a variety of these other very, very complex businesses have said, hey, Palantir has got the best in class platform, and its new artificial intelligence platform is priced very expensive. This is a very expensive software. Companies are spending $5 million or more a year, which is pretty expensive for an enterprise software, but it's best in class, and it's also giving a really, really good return on investment. And so Palantir, you know, the AI tie to this is that they've been doing it for kind of several decades of building out these algorithms and this ontology that can kind of take a whole bunch of data, put some analytics layers on top of it, and make companies and the government a lot more efficient.
Now, like you said, Palantir, relatively new as a private company, but CEO Alex Karp has been at the helm for 20 years now. He started in 2004. So kind of one of those companies that has stable growth. You know, the revenue is up about 19%, almost 20% year over year. And the income, as you said, getting some of those government contracts has gone up 200% year over year. So, you know, that's nothing to be shy about either. The other side, though, that in the one that seems to be gathering at least the public sentiment in our poll here today, is the Trade Desk. How is the Trade Desk involved in the AI conversation?
Yeah, sure. So, of course, you know, a couple of decades ago, to frame this, we had Netflix that kind of changed the whole media world. JT, you have been in the media world for quite a long time, so you certainly can appreciate what they did out there. Mm-hmm. Made everything on demand, right? You know, it's a streaming subscription rather than you have to tune in at the right time to watch your favorite TV shows or your favorite movies. And of course, this got very expensive, you know, the content rights and everything else they had to spend on. And so all these other companies that similarly created their own streaming channels, you know, to offset the costs of the content and, you know, digitizing all of this, they had them be ad supported. And so the Trade Desk was one of the earliest companies to kind of allow the programmatic placement of advertising, not just on websites, not just on podcasts, but certainly into connected TV, you know, video streaming services. And so it's become kind of the go-to out there, right? This is the front runner. They've kind of enabled this digital advertising transition. And it's what it does is it kind of works directly with the ad agencies. You know, ad agencies say, you know, this is the kind of demographic we want to go after. This is the kind of ad that we want to place out there. And then with no human intervention, it finds exactly the right person to send that to at exactly the right time. And it's been the front runner, right? This has kind of been the alternative to the walled gardens. And when I say a walled garden, we mean a company like a Facebook or a Google that hoards all the data kind of behind closed doors this is a much more open internet now. Universal ID and identifier, you know, this is kind of the refreshing alternative to others hoarding all of your data. And then, of course, that's got a share of controversy out there as well. But yeah, 23% revenue growth, JT, 47% EBITDA margin, a stock that's done very, very well for years and years. And unsurprisingly, that's due to Jeff Green, its visionary CEO, that just continues to be the leader in this very highly fragmented industry.
Yeah, you know, and both companies, like you said, kind of riding that, you know, anyone who can put AI in your quarterly earnings reports, you're doing pretty good, right? So they've both been kind of riding that boom. You look at where Palantir was, you know, in April of last year, it was trading at about $7 a share. Now it's at 24. So similarly, you know, early 2023, Trade Desk was trading at about $44 a share. Now it's 80 or so. So both of them gone up, you know, depending on where you bought, triple digits in the last year or two, as people, you know, kind of shrug off the doldrums of 2022 and get back into the stock trading world. The AI is, revolution is going to galvanize people's imaginations around companies like this. Both of them, looking at the kind of their charts over the last few years, are approaching what I would say are our peaks in you know, their relative price. And I know we'll factor that in too much here. We're going long-term, but yeah, you look at where Palantir peaked out, like its all-time high was, I think, around 35, and we're back up to 25-ish, 24 and change. I was at 26 yesterday. You know, the Trade Desk, you know, that got all the way up into the hundreds, but at 80, we're getting close, you know. Any concern here about, you know, bubbling here, or, you know, being in a situation where maybe we've already missed the boat on these two?
Yeah, I think that's a very good observation, JT. Neither one of these stocks is cheap. You know, you're looking at the Trade Desk, you're paying, what is it, 21 times sales right now. You look at Palantir, you're paying about 26 times sales. Trade Desk is over 100 times earnings, and Palantir is just now GAAP profitable. So it's something like 250 times earnings. You know, a lot of that is priced in, and these are not cheap stocks. But again, when you look at just the incredible free cash flow margins that they've got, the incredible growth rates, the consolidation that you kind of see in a lot of these spaces, and then the embrace of new tools like AI, we wanted to pick two companies that were really kind of the front runners, the innovators, you know, and sometimes you got to pay up for those. Sometimes those don't get cheap. We're going to talk about a cheap matchup here, you know, either on this show or in a couple of days, but these are not cheap stocks, but for a good reason. They're very, very high quality companies.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your leaning here? If you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
You know, with the long-term holding, I think that I would pick the Trade Desk, more for a corporate governance reasons than anything else. Palantir has got very smart executives, but they're also very, very well compensated, and they also like to make sure that they are firmly in control. And so the kind of the governance structure of Palantir has always kind of made me a little bit hesitant. They issue a lot of stock-based compensation. They've got a unique kind of ownership plan where they can basically not get pushed out by activist investors or individual shareholders. They can just dilute shareholders as much as they'd like to make sure that they remain firmly in managerial control. Trade Desk has got some similar clauses, you know, they're a little bit eyebrow raising. Jeff Green gets paid based on revenue growth, which is kind of interesting. You know, the platform gets bigger, he makes more money, and he is very well compensated from a stock-based comp perspective too. But I think that overall, I think that Palantir is going to grow faster, but I think the Trade Desk is going to be the better long-term investment.
Yeah, I share your reluctance to get into Palantir because of the leadership and just kind of the industry that they're in. That all seemed a little spooky to me. I tend to avoid companies that I don't understand and I can't explain. So the Trade Desk is also a complicated company, don't get me wrong. But I get ads and I get ad placement. And if you can figure out ways to get the right message to the right person and make a conversion, using AI and you know, expanded tools, you know, that's something I could get behind. So I would lean towards the Trade Desk as well. I know you, before we do this, I do want to talk Crocs and I do want to talk American Eagle Outfitters, because that's going to be our next matchup, just briefly. But I also want to have you tease up on what's going to happen for our next Seven Investing podcast with you and your other guest, who's going to be not me for a change. We're going to have somebody else in the hot seat with you. Tell us a little bit about what is going to go on. Also talking about these two companies.
Yeah, sure. So, one of my good friends that's a fellow investor is a guy named John Rotanti. We worked together at our former employer. We've kept in touch for over a decade now. He's a very, very great investor too, who looks at things very differently than I do. You know, he's a value investor, and we're going to chat about value investing and his stock picking process. Two that came up on a screen from a recent interview that he did with a kind of a legendary Fidelity value investor, a guy named Joel Tillinghast, were American Eagle and were Crocs, right? These fit the framework, which we'll talk about on this upcoming podcast. But it's two that, might not be immediately top of mind for investors, right? You think, fashion brands or, bricks and mortar retailers, shoe companies, these are not AI companies, JT. These are not AI platforms like the Trade Desk or like Palantir are, but they both have actually done quite well as investments for various reasons.
Well, Crocs actually makes some pretty nice platforms. I will say that if you're looking for some platforms, Crocs has some very unique. Yeah. But that's a different type of platform. Certainly not an AI platform. It's interesting that you think of that you talk about Crocs as a value company, and I guess it is. Like you said, we were talking a bit before the show started, and I was actually surprised to find out that their PE ratio is currently only at a 9.78, according to the Google. That's pretty low to me. That is in that value territory, right? The value guys, they don't like to buy anything that's more than 10 times earnings. And so that's right there pushing it. I will say, like you said, full disclosure, I've been a Crocs shareholder. I bought them in the summer of 2022. Because I saw their run up in 2021 when they ran up to 150, 180 at their peak. And then they dropped down to 40. And I was like, well, that's not really. And then they bought this Australian company called HeyDude, which is another shoe company. And HeyDude is actually one of the hottest shoe brands on the feet of people under the age of 25. So you've got all the kids wearing HeyDudes and you've got all their parents wearing Crocs around the house. And to me, that seemed like a really nice sandwich, right? Where you've got the two largest demographics, right? My mom, who's a boomer, loves Crocs, and the kids love Crocs because they get to put, funky, jewelry inside the holes, inside the clogs. And then you got HeyDude there, which is also an up and coming company. So that was my thesis. Is if they're making shoes that everyone likes, the two biggest segments of the population, then that's a pretty good one. And since then, the stock has gone from in its lows right there in the 2022, summer of 2022, it's up to about 124 from about 40. So the stock has done very well, rebounded very well. It's a nice rebound story. And I will say, when Crocs bought HeyDude, they revamped the company, floor to ceiling, and that's actually caused HeyDude to lose profitability as they go through that pretty major revamp. And one of the things on their most recent conference call, which came out February, was they said that they expect HeyDude to return to profitability using the Crocs model of wholesale mixed with, retail. By the end of 2024, net 2024 profitability. So that's something as a shareholder I'll be watching very closely. If that happens, they expect HeyDude might be able to clear $1 billion in sales in 2024, which would be very, very exciting. On the other side is another kind of turnaround tale in American Eagle Outfitters, which is, man, before you told me that that's who we were talking about today, I hadn't heard of American Eagle since high school, right? early college, right?
The mall store, right? It was the store in the mall.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, right? So I looked at their chart. They peaked in the mid 2000s. I guess that's when they were hip, right? Their stock was up to the mid 30s, right? And then it plummeted. Props to you if you bought it for $2 down in 99, right? You're doing pretty well. The all time the stock is up about 2,000%. But It peaked in the mid-2000s, like in the 30s. It peaked again in 2018, right? And then it faltered really, really badly. It got down below like $6 in the crash of 2020. And then immediately shot back up into the mid-30s again, right? Because that's what 2021 did. It made everything crazy. And so, but now we're seeing another one of those, you know, areas where it's just these huge rapid peaks with like equally rapid drawdowns for American Eagle outfitters. I've never seen anything quite like it. They just have two or three of these mountains where like within a 6 month period, everyone remembers AEO, the stock climbs precipitously, you know, like 3, 4, 5x in a year, and then it drops all the way back down. And it looks like we're in the middle of another one of those right now. Was it like $10 a share in May of 23? And now it's like 24 bucks a share, $22 a share. So it's interesting just looking at these companies, you know, both established companies, right? The CEO of American Eagle has been the CEO since 2014. So, I mean, American Eagle's founded in the 70s, but, you know, their CEO has been fairly consistent for like a decade or more. So they like him. Crocs, same thing. Their CEO, not a little bit more recent. I think he came in like 2017. They were founded in 2002, but, you know, he followed them through the last two crises and through the acquisition of HeyDude. So
that was Crocodile Dundee, right? The CEO you're talking about?
Yeah. That was the original CEO. They actually started out as a knife selling company. Very good. Love that. But you know, they are steady. They're, you know, they seem to be, at least in terms of revenue, increasing. It doesn't look like American Eagle is profitable right now, but HeyDude certainly is. Like HeyDude's profit margin was, I think, like 26% or something like that. Their net profit margin last year in December 2023. So yeah, it's interesting. And I'm not sure I would. I'm going to be interested to hear Ratanti explain to me why Crocs is a value stock. I mean, is it just the E ratio or what?
Well, typically when you have a lot of value stocks, right? These are modelable companies, right? These are companies that are well understood. You know, you look at a company that's selling footwear or selling retail, you know, you're not going to have anything that's just going to jump off the page and surprise a whole lot of people. You can kind of figure out what the information is, and then you make an assumption about what these companies are worth. And so a lot of times when you're doing value investing, it's because the market believes either correctly or incorrectly that something is wrong with these companies, right? You look at a company that's selling it, trying to run that PE ratio of around 7, which again, PE ratio is shorthand for basically, you know, discounted cash flow analysis. But right around PE of 7, you're kind of modeling in a company that's in decline, perpetual decline. They're not actually growing revenue and earnings anymore. They're actually declining. And so that's why you see companies, you know, like cigarette companies, tobacco companies, sometimes commercial real estate companies, or retailers that are priced so expensively like this. And when you've got a company like Crocs, like you mentioned, JT, you know, 9x earnings, the market is pricing this one like it's going to slowly go out of business. And that is not the case for Crocs. Crocs has doubled its revenue in the last 3 years. It's a 50% increase in its operating profit the last 3 years. It's still growing quite well, which seems out of sync with what the market's saying. And with American Eagle, I mean, this is a company, like you said, been around since the 70s. Who would expect it that, you know, a fashion retailer that's primarily bricks and mortar in the malls across America has defied the odds, done fantastically well in the public markets these last few years. And yet, even though it's priced at 20x earnings, which doesn't look like a value stock, it's priced at only 8x its cash flows. And for those that are really, you know, eager to look, you know, a company that's churning out cash and it's not priced expensively, very inexpensive in terms of the multiple of that cash flow, this is one that really should draw a lot of attention to, especially for kind of value investors. So John and myself and this next matchup, it's going to be an interesting one. Like you said, Crocs versus American Eagle, two that might not normally make it onto a screen of ours, but you're kind of eager and excited to talk about
them. Yeah, I'm going to be intrigued as a Crocs shareholder to listen to it. I followed the stock for a couple of years, so it's great to get a 7 investing take on it and a Ratanti take as well. So I'm definitely going to be watching my Spotify for that when it gets in. If you want to join us and join our competition and let us know what your best stocks of 2024 are. You can do that by going to seveninvesting.com/contest. And it's totally free to join. You just sign up for a free stock card, entry level, not subscription, it's free, but a membership there at Stock Card. You can make your portfolio of the seven stocks that you think are going to be the best stocks in 2024. I actually don't think it has to be seven. It can be up to seven, if I understand it right.
That's right. Yeah.
So you can make your stocks, you make your picks, you can change them throughout the year and you say, you know what, I'm going to put it all in, Crocs. I think Crocs is going to be the highest performing stock of 2024. Wouldn't that be great for me? Whatever you want to choose, you can go in there, you can make it work. If it winds up that you are the winner and that you manage your portfolio the best over the next year, you get free subscriptions to Stock Card and 7 Investing and a $1,000 Amazon gift card, which is pretty darn cool. Also, I will say it helps to know your stuff when you're doing this kind of stuff. So you can always join 7 Investing straight up for $1 for your first week and just $17 a month after that. It's a great way to learn about stocks, get a few great recommendations every month from Simon and the gang. Also, our advisors drop their best buys, which I think, forgive me for not knowing off the top of my head, when are we dropping our best buys, Simon?
Thursday evening on a subscriber call will be the newest best buys for March.
That's it. So the best buys for people don't know, this is what each of our advisors says. If I could buy a stock tomorrow morning, this is the stock I would buy. Right? Out of all of our recommendations over the past 4 years. It's great. We compile these into a portfolio every quarter of our Best Buy stocks, and they have been crushing the market. It's crazy. Some of these Best Buys, these quarterly Best Buys, are outperforming the S&P 500 by like 20-30%. It's wild to see. So hopefully that continues too, because that's great for me in marketing. So thank you guys for doing that. And it's a great call. If you're not a subscriber, become a subscriber to get into our monthly advisor calls where you can talk to each of our lead advisors each month. They go through, they tell you their best buys, and they go through all their recommendations for the month and any other stocks that they just, hey, by the way, there's some newsworthy stuff that happened. Let's talk about it. It's the fastest hour to investing as far as I'm concerned. It's a great way to get a lot of information very quickly and really look through your portfolio and say, is there a chance that I'm missing something that could be a good long-term investing opportunity for me moving forward? So that is Thursday at 7:30 Central?
8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central.
7 Central, 7. I was off by 30. All right, so 7 Central, 8 Eastern. So get into that. If you subscribe today, you can make it in time to the monthly call on Thursday at 7 Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. Simon, anything else you want to say before we end it here?
No, I'm enjoying this. I'm having a lot of fun with the stock picking competition. Like you said, 7investing.com/contest. If you want to join, show us your favorite stocks for 2014. We'll give you $1,000 to the winner.
You can do it for 2024 as well. That's the best stocks of 2024 competition. See, here's what happened, Simon. We started talking about Crocs and American Eagle Outfitters, and you thought it was 2014 all over again.
Did I say 2014? I totally slipped that. 2024, 20, whatever year it is this year. It's this year's topic.
This year's stocks, everyone.
Thank you for keeping me honest, though.
Best stocks of the current year all year long.
More coffee, JT. I need more caffeine, obviously.
That's it. I'm going to go get some, too. We're going to be very well caffeinated. We'll see y'all subscribers on Thursday at 7 p.m. We will see the rest of you in our contest, the best stocks of 2024 contest. Go to 7investing.com/contest to join that. For Simon Erickson, I'm JT Street, reminding you that at 7 Investing, we empower you to invest in your future. Have a great day, everyone.